Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. It is
Woohoo!
Monday, March 30th. The Final Four is set, and we're here to talk some college hoops. How's that sound?
Yeah,
I'm your host,
it
Chad Schur. We got Matt Sikowski and John Sleek
the
up top
crown.
with me. John
The crown.
Titel.
It's crown week.
Got John Titel, Joby Fortson down the bottom row. David Griggs, unfortunately, with us also. I think Iveta Aberman is going to be joining us in a few minutes as well, but we want to get going here. We've got a lot to get through. It was a hell of a Sweet 16 and a pretty amazing Elite Eight. And Mr. Titel, you had a chance to be there. So I think we'll maybe start out with the games that you're at, which are the story as far as anybody's concerned, I believe. But let's get the screen share up here first. Oh, confirmation, by the way. Griggs is still locked in the puppet bunker.
Yep, but I have completed the next version of Griggs AI, and it's even better
2.0.
than the previous
Yeah.
one. The previous one was pretty good.
Let's get to actual games. And we saw what may go down as one of the greatest endings, at least, in NCAA tournament history. I personally would argue, short of Chris Jenkins' shot, it probably was the greatest ending. Maybe not a full game, because the game was kind of lousy till the last few minutes. But let's talk East Regional first. Let's go right into it. Mr. Titel, you were there for the shot, the turnover, and the UConn
Sure, I'll take you through my day. So I got
win.
there about 90 minutes before the 5:05 Eastern tip to grab my chicken tenders and French fries with my meal voucher for dinner, and then just walked around to see who was there. I'd been looking for Bill Murray for the whole week, and I did not see him on Friday. I did see him on Sunday, thank God. He looks very different with the mustache, but
He's
he's
not away.
still.
He's on his way to Boston College because that's where his son's going now. So,
I believe that Luke Murray's introductory press conference at BC is tomorrow, which is funny only because I thought that Luke was riding out the whole UConn run, and he's, as we were well aware, he's not done yet. I didn't see Bobby Hurley there. I was looking for him all weekend because I was dying to see which team he'd be cheering for. Talk about mixed emotions. You got your brother, and you got the alma mater that you won two titles back to back in. The game itself, as you said, it was not a great game in terms of a close competitive game until the very end. First half was all Duke because the Boozer brothers were playing amazing, both of them. It wasn't just the Cameron show. Caden was really showing out and showing up in the first half. And then at halftime, I had been trying to interview Val Kamenia, Nick Kamenia's father, all weekend. And he said, yeah, if you want to drop by at halftime. So I did. And then he's like, oh, if you want to talk to Darren Harris's dad over here and Patrick Ngannou's bit dad over here. And so one prepared interview turned into three not so prepared interviews, which was chaotic but fun. Everybody was very nice. And then I went back up and typed them. So I missed the whole comeback as I was trying to furiously get everything done. And then I went down at the under four timeout to try to get close for photos for the post game. And so I'm standing in the tunnel and I'm looking up on the big screen Jumbotron when I see the shot go up by Mullins after the steal. And I said out loud, that's too far, which I often do when guys shoot from 35 feet. But this time it went in, and everybody, of course, went ballistic. And the people in charge, the staff is in charge of bringing out the Duke championship gear, is like sprinting by me back to the storage area to get the UConn gear. It was hilarious because you have to make the split second on the fly change. And like, if you look at the all tournament team for the East region, I think there were three guys who made it from Duke because with a second left, it should have been three guys from Duke, and then they had to change everything around. And then I got some great photos, and I was in the background of a tweet where they had Hurley on camera dropping F-bombs, and it was just amazing. Like the history will remember the shot by Mullins, as we've been discussing offline. Like it's not as good as Jenkins. You could argue it's not as iconic. It's not as iconic as Leitner's shot, which is 30 years on, still amazing, but as the puppet was saying, it really is one of the more incredible shots we've ever seen.
Yeah, I would also argue the Leitner shot came at the end of an amazing game. This kind of, if this had been a close game all the way, maybe there's more of an argument. It's more iconic than the Leitner shot, but wow. And now I want to get all your thoughts on this game and Maybe we even talk a little about Duke's win over St. John's and UConn's win over Michigan State also. But Joby, I want to
John,
start with you.
Tytel, just for future reference, as far as rushing to get things done, you don't need to miss any of the game to get things done. We don't have like deadlines here.
Good to
So
know.
in the future, don't miss the game.
But Joby, I know you want to talk about it. I can't get the videos up on the screen. I have some problems with playing some videos, but all over Twitter or X or whatever since the game ended, there's been all these complaints. There should have been not one, but two different technicals on UConn after the last play. I'll throw it over to you and I'll throw my comments in there, but it's
Well,
pretty crazy.
I mean, what's the thing that has really hit Twitter big, because it comes across to those of us who have been exposed to the Duke fandom and for so long in the ACC country, is the Duke radio play-by-play announcer. If you have not seen this, I say you should go to YouTube, look it up, type in Duke radio play-by-play announcer UConn, and basically, it's a normal, as you know, it's like, oh, you know, the pass intercepted, you know, a shot, oh, it's good. Yeah. And that's not, yeah, that I don't expect him to get excited over as the homer guy. But then he goes, there's a technical. There should be a technical. There should be a technical because McGee's come off the bench, which, by the way, he was
It
in
was Malachi Smith coming off the
Malachi
bench.
Smith,
One
who
little
was, by the
problem with
way,
him,
in the
though.
game.
He was in the game.
It was in the game at the
So
time.
he was running
Malachi.
on the court.
Yes, he was hugging his player for making a shot. He had walked like 10 feet. How about that? You know, from on the court. And so it was just the epitome of just Duke-isms to all of us. Like, you know, it's like, God, that fan base. But then something else happened that was very interesting. And I dare say, had John Shire challenged by Danny Hurley, making, from what I can tell, contact with an official, that's an auto.
But Joby,
Hurley,
there's
there
a little
was
more to that
0.3. So
story.
what happened is Hurley throughout the game had been basically on the officials. I know, shocker. I mean, yeah, on the officials. And he even at one point told the official, I'm the best coach in the country. You need to listen to me.
It
And
was
we're going to win
Roger
this
Ayre, by
game.
the way, is the official there.
And after the shot went in, Hurley went up to the official and got in his face. And if there's video on this too, and actually made contact forehead to forehead, didn't pop him, but you know, kind of ran him down with his forehead, staring straight in his eyes. I'm sorry, that I don't understand the moment, but you got taunting, you got contact with the official. That's a tech. It is, and I'm not
Joby,
a Duke fan here, but it's a technical. And if Shire
Joby,
is the
let me jump in. The official was Roger Ayre. And I got to give a shout out to
yeah.
Seth Greenberg, who reached out to Roger Ayre today. And Roger Ayre said, I remember saying a word to him. I don't remember any contact at all. So Roger Ayre didn't even realize that any contact was made. And it was a friendly conversation, apparently, between the two of them. It was not.
Yeah, oh, that was a
Oh,
very friendly
well,
conversation. But
this
had
is per
Harris
the
assessed the
official, man.
technical, it wouldn't have been friendly.
This is per the official. So I think it was a bunch of nothing, also, quite
I
honestly.
don't know how much of nothing that is. I mean, because I guess I have my backup whenever someone does the taunting move. That was without a doubt a taunting move. That was more taunting than staring at a player who you've dunked on, you know, who's prone on the ground. Yeah, I mean, that was much worse. And they're very lucky. I'll just say this, because had Shire challenged it, had Shire made a big deal about it, then there, I think they would have had to go with it. That's my opinion, you know. And what better play person, what better team to suffer, given the Leitner background, suffer such an iconic loss? Duke can handle it. And what a better coach it could have happened to. Had it been reversed.
Let me get a couple other opinions on this game in this East region. Matt, we saw Duke flame out for the second straight NCAA tournament, too. I mean, wow.
And even like it wasn't probably as big of a blowing of the last 2 years, but even they had a 9-point lead in the second half against NC State. That miracle NC State team, they probably had no business being there.
She didn't beat my Marquette team in the Sweet 16 either, but hey. Yeah, that 4 for 31 we'll never forget. But anyway, that's so like this is 3 straight years, basically, you could say Duke blew golden opportunities in the tournament, because this is when watching the entire game, you could tell Duke was a much more talented, at least raw talent, gonna play in the NBA roster. And that it's still they found a way to lose the game again.
Yeah,
Well, it was the Elite Eight. And they were playing I know Duke has lost like close games the last three tournaments, but they've made two Elite Eights and one Final Four. I mean, at what point are I mean, if they were going out like in the round of 64, like Kentucky did year after year after year with a dominant roster, while I still think it was a little bit ridiculous to criticize Calipari as much as they were, at least it made sense. This was the Elite Eight in the Final Four. I mean, if that's failing, then what the hell is the rest of the country doing?
Griggs, the counterpoint to that is you look at Duke's last four losses as a program. Houston in the Final Four last year, Texas Tech and North Carolina regular season this year, and this game to UConn. They had double digit, I believe 15 plus point leads in all four of those games and found ways to blow them all.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of other games that they didn't blow.
Right, but I don't know that if this had been a close game that they lost, it would be as bad as just the fact that you've blown these huge leads. And I don't think John Shire should be fired. I think he's one of the best coaches in the country. I don't think
Yeah.
I'm not even entertaining that notion. But I also get the fact that hey, this is four bad losses, two of them in the NCAA tournament, Final Four and Elite Eight.
I don't know. I don't even I've never been with a team that was within a million miles of the Elite Eight. I would love I'm sure I wouldn't love it in the moment,
Well,
but
Clown
wow.
College isn't in D1, Griggs.
Yeah, I know it's not.
Stalika, one more thought on this. Any thoughts on those two semifinals we saw also?
I think from a historical standpoint, first, it's not the first time Duke has blown a double-digit lead, even back in 1998, where Kentucky got some revenge against Duke for that aforementioned game in 92. That was a game where Kentucky had fallen behind double digits and ended up beating Duke, and I think it was either the East or the Southeast regional en route to their title win in 1998, which was the only one under Tubby Smith. But I think another thing we hadn't really touched on was you look at the final 10 seconds of the game where Duke was up three and they end up fouling. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but what happened was UConn ended up making one of the two foul shots, so it should have worked out okay for Duke. And then that got to a point where they tried to do an inbounds. They end up throwing that awful pass and led to the Mullins three.
Yeah, I'll also throw one more stat out here, maybe Tytel. It's because your type of number here. This 19-point comeback by UConn tied for the sixth biggest comeback in NCAA tournament history. Tied with
Tied
North
for the
Carolina this
sixth.
year against VCU.
Ah, nice.
How about Carolina and Duke? Two complete flameouts for Tobacco Road there. But let's go ahead and scroll on down to the South region, where Griggs, let me start with you out here down here in the South. We looked at this last week and we said this is Houston easily here.
Yes.
And lo and behold, here's the Illini knocking them off. That really good game between Iowa and Nebraska, and then Illinois in the Final Four.
Yeah, Iowa and Nebraska was a really good game. Iowa kind of got control of it, but not until like the final minute of the game. It was just really exciting to see last year's Drake team put on those Iowa uniforms and get this far. But I guess the bigger story was Houston. They were playing in Houston, and I just thought defensively that they would just overpower Illinois, and they didn't. And you got to credit Illinois for this. Houston could get nothing going offensively in the first half, and it felt like every time Houston was shifting momentum their way, Illinois came up with a big play. I don't know if it was tipped a buzzer, and I know Houston kind of came back to make the score look a little more respectable, but at no point in that Sweet 16 game did it feel like Illinois was not 100% in control.
And Tytel, I almost get the feel that people are overlooking Illinois in this Final Four. It's kind of like Arizona, Michigan, we'll get to it in a minute here, UConn. Oh, by the way, Illinois. This Illinois team, I thought they were damn impressive this weekend, actually.
That's the thing, Chad. They've been impressive all year, but a lot of people forgot about them because they kind of limped to the finish line. If you look at their last five losses, four in overtime and one to Michigan. I mean, they're playing an amazing schedule. They lost earlier to UConn by double digits and then by single digits, Nebraska and Alabama. Like, they played the whole like Sweet 16 field because their schedule is top 20 in the country. The size is key for them. They have the tallest average height in the nation at 6'8", thanks to the big guys with the Balkan names, Mirkovic, Stojakovic, Ivicic. They're going to throw waves of people as they did at Houston with Chris Sinak, as they did at Iowa with Fulgaris, and as they're going to do to Terrace Reed Jr. with UConn. They're just going to hit the boards. They're going to block shots. They're going to play defense. You see all the scores of their opponents. There's not a lot of teams who scored a ton of points against them because their defense is solid. I wasn't sure about Underwood as a coach in March. I believe in him now because it's working. And yes, they are the fourth best team, arguably, but do not count them out because they are absolutely capable of winning two more.
They had an amazing regional. They really did. Chad's right. I mean, they won two really hard games and they knocked out. I think Houston was one of the harder teams to match up against and play against, and they just beat them about as badly as Houston's been beaten in recent memory.
Stalika, I've got to ask you, but going back to the Iowa-Nebraska semifinal here too, was a really close game, and probably where the game turned around, Iowa did it thanks to their power play, right?
Yeah, it was not a 6-on-5 where they snuck an extra player. This was Nebraska literally only sending four guys to the floor because one player failed to realize, oh, I'm supposed to be on the court right now, and that's where Fulgaris ends up getting a 3-point play that put the Hawkeyes up for good on that one. And to his credit, Hoiberg was the one that took the fall for that one because he was the one that had to communicate, hey, these are the five I need out on the floor. This was not the time to be pulling a Norman Dale and just going a player short.
Well, 10 miles could get away with four players easily. I just think it's a learning experience.
Matt, your thoughts on the Illini's championship here in the South?
I think they definitely should be favored in the semifinal game, and that's where, like, put this way, you have KenPom 1, KenPom 2, and KenPom either 3 or 4 Illinois, and then UConn's actually still like 9 or 10. So, like, I think Illinois should be favored, and that's they mentioned, I think, Tytel, a great point. Terrace Reed's going to struggle to score with all that length and size. Not to mention, I think they might get a couple of fouls on Reed on the other end, which trying to defend them. So, this one, actually, I quite like Illinois in the semifinal matchup. That I think they'll be a small underdog in the finals, but yeah, like plus right, for the perception and reality of them winning, I think there's a gulf and that like no one probably gives them that much of a chance. And I think they generally, at least the non-KenPom people, probably think UConn's going to beat them. And I think Illinois should be like a not only favorite, but about 4 or 5 point favorite in that other semifinal. And that from the famous one there, the Arizona Michigan game. But then yeah, I think at that point, and then. It's closer than you would think against the Arizona Michigan winner. Like, it wouldn't stun me at all if Illinois beat them, and it would probably stun the general public or the general college basketball fan.
Yeah, Joby, I wish Rocco was here tonight. He couldn't make it to the show, obviously. But this probably podcast maybe about a month and a half ago, probably early February, where he and I both discussed the fact that at that point in time we thought Illinois was our national champion. He and I don't know about him, but I myself completely fell off of them, and I wish I'd stayed on that bandwagon at this point.
Well, Wagler is like I mean, under-recruited, because he didn't do the shoe, circuit that a lot of others, that everybody else does. And so give Illinois credit, give my Brad Under credit for like making the, for finding him, because he is the difference. Yeah, we could talk about the height. I think Tytel is right to talk about the height, because that is a factor. You need that difference. You need difference makers. He's the difference maker on this team, and it's fun watching him. He's going to be he's produced for such an under-recruited kid. He has now made himself a lot of money long term, because and great for I feel good for him. The Illini, I agree with Matt. They are a strong. Do not count them out. I would rank them fourth among all the teams. but it's not like, oh, they're the Cinderella who's just happy to be there, like a VCU or a George Mason. This is a real team that has a real shot at winning the whole thing.
Let's go up to the west, up and over here to the west region. And Tytel, you know I got to start with you. Congratulations to you, to your Arizona Wildcats. Honestly, the only good game in this region, I think, was the Texas Purdue game that ended up not mattering. But
I'm telling you, Chad, like all the DC Wildcat alumni like myself were very excited to watch the game at the bar the other night. We were getting very ner I was getting very nervous at halftime. Some of my friends were very confident. I'm like, you know, I've seen us lose in the Elite Eight, not just once, but 5 times, last 5 times. It's been since 01 when we made the title game. We've lost 5 Elite Eights in a row, and I was not feeling it because Kaufman Wren got in foul trouble and Smith rolled his ankle, and they were still coming on and hitting threes and they were blocking our shots. And I was getting a little nervous. And then the second half, we put our foot on the gas pedal, didn't let up. I think it's a combination of Purdue falling apart. I mean, Smith had a horrible, horrible shooting night. Lawyer was off as well, but it was a total team effort. I mean, Koa had 20 points, but Burries was hitting threes, Bradley was driving. Awaka was in foul trouble. He didn't do much. Crevis was getting rebounds. Like, it really was the total team effort. And as to whether we can do anything against Michigan, we can, but like Michigan's great, as we'll get to shortly. The larger question looking ahead is there's all sorts of rumors about Tommy Lloyd going to North Carolina. Dorman and I were doing the math with the contracts, and like we're kind of nervous about that too. But I don't know if that's a storyline for a future show or the later this show, but hopefully Tommy stays around because he is now godlike in Tucson.
Matt, this game here with Purdue, I mean, probably played their perfect game the first half. They had that 7-point lead, but couple adjustments at halftime and it was over.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Actually, one of my group chats asked, someone literally flat asked me, what could Purdue do to win? I'd say they'd have to be insane from three. They were in the first half. They're 6 from 11 from three from the first half. I don't think they made a single three in the second half. And that's where, to stay in that game and ultimately win, you have needed Smith, Lawyer, Cox, and that. And like, they would have all probably had to hit multiple threes, I think, for Purdue to win that game. And they did not. And that's where, yeah. Arizona's defense suffocated them in the second half, and then they got to the will against a not great Purdue defense. In that, they just basically scored at will at the rim on offense, and that's why they ran away with the game and easily covered the spread.
Yeah, Joby.
Yeah, that I mean, Purdue was hot in the first half, but I actually think a bigger factor was Arizona was quote unquote not. Bradley looked off in the first half. He really did. It seemed like Koa Pete was the only one keeping Arizona afloat, to be very honest. There was a little foul trouble here and there. Cuff was just dominating the offensive boards. Purdue, I think, had 9 offensive rebounds in the first half. 9. I don't know if Arizona, with their size, has given up 9 offensive rebounds in a game all year. There were a lot of things happening. Lloyd got the team, diving for loose balls in the second half. When you play harder, you say sometimes things work out. And they got back in their groove, and Arizona is, along with Michigan, and I would say Duke. Those three teams have been the best three teams all year. And Arizona showed in the second half why they are part of that group. And when we talk about national champion possibilities, that it's going to be tough to argue against the team we'll talk about in the next bracket. But if anyone can do it, the Tytel and Dorman's Wildcats are it.
Arizona is the best team, and they had the best profile. Been saying they were our number one overall seed.
You know what doesn't win you games in the NCAA tournament, Griggs?
What's
Your
that?
profile. Does not, absolutely doesn't help you win a game to
But
save.
it helps you get the
Get
but it
in.
helps
You
you
have
get
to
a
get
one
in and get
seed.
seated. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had the best profile, and they had the best team. You know what
So,
does help you win games is being the best team, which Arizona is,
okay,
as
that's a
indicated
different
by their
story.
best profile,
That's a
Chad. What's
different
your point?
story. And
What's
had they
your
been
point?
the number one overall, Chad, it'd be setting up possibly for a Michigan Arizona final, still, because they would be in opposite sides.
Well, let's talk about the last region here, the Midwest. And Salika, let me start with you. Michigan is in the Final Four, got by Alabama, got by Tennessee, who surprised Iowa State. And Rick Barnes has
Got
now.
by Tennessee. That's an interesting way of
Well,
putting what they did against Tennessee. They got by Tennessee.
my comment was more on the whole story that Rick Barnes could never get to the second weekend. Now he's easily getting to the second weekend, making the Elite Eight every year, and cannot win a game any further than that. But
The only exception was 2003 when he had TJ Ford on his team and he ends up going to the Final Four the year where they actually did decide to seed all the number ones the following year because everything was arranged so that they would have Kentucky and Arizona, who were 1 and 2 that year, would have met in the Final Four semis. And
Yeah,
now you look.
neither got there.
Yeah,
That's
but
true.
let's
And
talk about this year, Sleeka. How about those Wolverines?
well, the Wolverines, they weren't going to be denied by a Tennessee defense that had suffocated Iowa State and kept them away from the 3-point line up until the very end. But by then, it was too late for the Cyclones to really make a dent into the Vols lead. And Tennessee just basically had nothing left for the final game against Michigan and Alabama. I mean, they did put up a decent fight given all the on-court or off-court stuff that had been going on for them all year. And Michigan certainly looking like they could potentially be on a collision course with Illinois for the title game, which would be a rematch of 1989.
Yeah, unfortunately for Michigan, their women's team just lost tonight, but they were in line to try to get the trifecta of winter championships with their hockey team in the Frozen Four and their men's team in the Final Four here. But Tytel, I think Sleek was right. This Michigan and Joby earlier, this Michigan team's looking so darn good too.
I mean, if you look at the profile, which the puppet likes, not only do they have the number one adjusted defensive efficiency in the nation, but they've scored 90 plus points in each tournament game. And they're not playing like 16 seeds besides Howard. They're playing Josh Schertz, Nate Oates, and Rick Barnes. And they're destroying these teams by double digits and scoring 90 with the best defense in the country. Like, there's a reason they're favored against my Wildcats. It's because they're that damn good. And Jaxel Lendeborg is looking like he's might be better than Cameron Boozer in terms of the all-around game. And for all the Big Ten point guards, there's money. There's the all-time career assist leader in Braden Smith, Jeremy Fears Jr., who led the nation in assists per game this year, Bennett Sturts, who almost single-handedly put his team in the Final Four. It's Elliot Cadeau, who's not the best shooter, but he runs the offense to perfection.
He does. And Joe, we just go back to the semifinals here. Iowa State, I got convinced heading in, especially after my team that I picked to win the Midwest region lost to Tennessee in the second round. I got convinced that this Iowa State team was going to win this region. And then here they are without Jefferson, and there was nothing there.
Yeah, well, I think we saw what the Iowa State without Jefferson was. I mean, Tennessee played a perfect first half in the round of 32 against Virginia. They played close to a perfect game for them. And they just ran out of gas against a Michigan team who is just steamrolling their way. I am going to, what's the over and under, by the way, for Tytel on alley-oops by both teams? I mean, you're going to see a lot because Cadeau is an expert at it. Yeah, he is one of the best I've seen at being able to set those up. And Arizona is not afraid to to respond in kind. It's going to be a wonderful game. I'm hoping that we'll get another great classic. But yeah, I think Jefferson's injury for Iowa State, that once that happened, I think they weren't going to, I mean, you think Tennessee losing bad? I think had Iowa State somehow gotten past the Volunteers, I think you would have seen a similar margin. And it's a shame because Iowa State had such a magical season with some great wins throughout the year, a well-earned and deserved 2 seed. Let's not take that away. A well-earned, deserved 2, but they were not the team that we saw all year when one of their key pieces goes down.
And I know Tytel's hoping that North Carolina's on the phone to Iowa State's head coach right now, but that's a different story. That's an off-season story. But Matt, let me get you final thoughts here on this Midwest region.
Yeah, that's a Michigan absolutely ran through it. I do think with a healthy Jefferson, I actually think Iowa State could have been a difficult matchup for him. The size probably still would have been too overwhelming, but actually, as well as he's played now, I still think at some point, if and when Michigan loses in the tournament, it will be because Elliott Cano and actually not having LJ Cason, who's an excellent backup, and that to where if Cano had got off the rails, you could have had someone to replace him. Then they don't have that now, and that then you have. I think Iowa State's pressure defense could have been an issue. And then Arizona, Jaden Bradley's like a one-man shutdown, especially at the college level, to where I think he might, that might be, if Arizona wins, it's because Jaden Bradley shuts him down.
Slika, I want to get your final thoughts on the Michigan-Tennessee game. I think you have a little quote for us.
Well, I think it was something similar we heard when Ohio State beat Tennessee in football a couple years ago in the college football playoff. But it was like someone was saying this was the worst loss for a team from Tennessee since the Civil War and the Battle of Shiloh.
Wow.
Ouch.
That's pretty rough. That was a bad loss.
Well, Grant was a lot. Ulysses Grant was a lottery pick. So there you go.
Here's our final four: UConn, Illinois in the first semifinal, Arizona, Michigan in the second semifinal. Championship coming up Monday night. I'll run through each of you. Tell me what you see happening in these last three games of the season here. Griggs, let me start with you on this question.
It's been. I think the teams that are in the Final Four. I mean, it's hard to not be really impressed with what all of them have done. Illinois had Illinois had a really strong regional, and they're probably the weakest team overall. Connecticut probably had the most, at least, exciting way to get there. So it feels like it's just it's Goliath versus Goliath all the way around. And I've been high on Arizona all year. They were my pick too. I think since Christmas, I've thought that they were probably the best overall team. Even the games they've lost has not changed my mind on that. So I think this Arizona Michigan game is just a phenomenal game. I mean, it's worthy of a championship game. That's how strong the matchup are. And I could easily see the winner of this going on to win it, but I'm gonna have Arizona taking out Illinois.
I don't know, taking out Illinois. I kind of like that. Tytel, what do you think is going to happen?
It would be nice revenge for the 2005 Elite Eight that I'm still not over. So if I can get some closure, that'd be good.
I think you would be if this happens.
Yes, it's very hard to pick against Dan Hurley, who's won two of the past three titles. Very hard to pick against Dusty May because, as I said, his team is so amazing. I will go with Arizona, Illinois, mostly for heart rather than head because the head says Hurley's great and Michigan's great. But if we remember 2 years ago yesterday, the 2024 Elite Eight, where UConn, I believe, scored 30 in a row against Illinois. I know that not a lot of the players then are still there, but you can bet that Underwood and the fans have not forgotten that run. So they want some revenge, and I think they'll get it. Arizona will somehow pull the rabbit out of the hat, and then Tommy Lloyd will hopefully not have his final game be a win over Illinois in the title.
Matt, it's been a billion years since the Big Ten team has won the NCAA tournament. We got two of them here. Are you going to go with the Big Ten team, or are you going to Arizona too?
Nope, I'll make it a billion in 1 year, then, and I think I said it's boring, but I think going the same way Arizona and Illinois, and that like the one I actually have more confidence in the Illinois pick, and that I think that's a little bit bigger disparity of rosters in there, and that's, I say Illinois wins it. Like I said, it would actually shock me if Illinois wins by double digits. And then I think Arizona, Michigan will go down to the wire. And while I'm hoping for a gameplay of the 80s or 90s because of the occasion, I think even though both teams want to go pretty fast, I still think the occasion will keep it to where like 77-75-ish Arizona.
Well, Joby, what about you?
I think I should pick opposite of what I think because I'm picking the same as everybody else. I like Illinois, I
I've
like
been wrong this
Arizona,
whole
and I
tournament, by the
like
way.
Arizona to win it. And that just means we're waiting for a Michigan-UConn final.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, because
Stalika, you're the last one left. Every single one of us has picked Arizona over Illinois in the championship game. Will you make it unanimous?
No, it's very hard for me to go against a program that's 12-1 all time in Final Four play, because I think UConn has probably, what, six national titles now, and the only time I remember them losing a game in the Final Four was, I want to say, 09, when they lost to North Carolina in the semis. Illinois and Underwood, they're going to be new to at least this far this stage. UConn, they've got not everyone back from their national title game a couple of years ago, but Alex Caravan, certainly one of the guys that can certainly provide some guidance to the younger players. I would have to go with Arizona and UConn to ultimately meet in the championship game.
And the winner being
The winner being.
same one I picked in my bracket, the Arizona Wildcats.
So one difference is Talika thinks it's UConn over Illinois. Other than that, we're all taking Tytell Wildcats. Sorry, but I
Thank you for
probably
the kiss of death, everybody.
Yes.
No.
I mean, boy, have we screwed over Tytell.
Let's take a quick look at a couple other things that are going on. The NIT is still going on, Griggs. It's coming back here on, I guess it's Thursday night with the semifinals, Auburn, Illinois State, and New Mexico, Tulsa, playing the games in Indy, and they're gonna have the championship game the Sunday in between these Final Four and the national championship.
Yeah, Illinois State really on fire. I mean, they had a really good regular season, but they've really looked good in this tournament. Big, sort of decisive win against the Dayton team that had been playing really well. Auburn, I don't think that this is redemption at all for not getting selected. I don't think that this indicates they should have been, but having a really good postseason tournament.
Okay. Who do you think wins it now? You think Illinois State wins it then?
No, but that's who I'm going to pick anyway because I've had so much fun watching them.
That's it. It's actually an interesting day on Sunday. Not only are they
Yeah, it
going to, in
is.
India, are they going to have this championship game, but before they'll have both the D2 and the D3 championship games all in Indy on Sunday. So should be a fun day if you're there. CBC finally getting underway. And Joby, I know you're looking forward to this.
Oh, the crown. Oh, what a lovely, lovely game. Set of games. And Chad, aren't you? You're the one who should be on pins and needles. My goodness, what a well-earned.
There are two of us on this podcast whose schools are still playing.
What a well-earned bid by the Scarlet Knights. I guess I guess it's they are taking a cue. They're just merely taking a cue from the AC8. It's just they had a different Stallings Award winner, so that's all.
Oh, didn't Nebraska win this event last year?
They did.
And what did they do this year?
They did
Flamed
not.
out
They
in the
yeah.
second round or
Right.
whatever.
Had their best season of all time.
Yeah.
And they also played only four guys in the Sweet 16 game in the closing
Yeah.
minute.
Yeah.
I'm going, obviously, the winner of this is who cares the most. And so Rutgers has as good a shot as any. Maybe they care more than anybody else. But
Oh,
as far as
geez. Yeah.
capabilities, as far as capabilities, I really like the Sooners here. If everybody brings their A game, I think the Sooners are the best team of the bunch. Stanford has a very high ceiling, but I think their floor will show up in the series of three games.
One other tournament here. The women's tournament is going on. And this is a screenshot of their bracket. Let me kind of scroll all the way up here. It's
Wah-wah.
well, I wanted to throw this out here. Tytell, let me ask you a question. Let me do a quick moment here. UConn, one seed in the Final Four after winning 90 to 52, 98-45, 63-42, 70-52. UCLA in the Final Four. Again, four complete blowout wins. Down here in the bottom, Texas in the Final Four after four blowout wins. South Carolina, three blowout wins. They're playing TCU as we record this. All four one seeds crushing it through this tournament. Is that how bad it is in the women's game that there's just complete lack of any parity? Or is it
Oh,
just a
I
what's
think
going on here?
that's
Because it's been an ugly tournament. That there's no close games here. There's a couple, but not a lot.
you're right to say that the one seeds are in a class of their own, but despite the blowout scores, which you are correct to point out as well, because they happened, like TCU, they're great. And like if it wasn't for these juggernauts, they got Marta Suarez, they got Olivia Miles from Notre Dame, the transfer, like they can play with anybody. I still think it's the UConn Invitational, and I wouldn't pick against Gino Auriemma in March or April or frankly any other month because he's so freaking amazing. I think it's UConn's to lose.
It's just felt like, there was a couple of, there's a nice little story, Joe, with your Virginia team making getting a couple of wins, but there really hasn't been.
And
It's the
let
way these
TCU
one
team at
seeds
the
have been
half.
dominated, it's been ugly.
And led Tytel's TCU team at the half. Suarez just went nuts and scored what 38 in that game. But Virginia actually had TCU on the ropes. So, but yeah, I think a Virginia grad will win the women's tournament though.
There
It is the dawn of a new era, and it is not UConn. I think the Gamecocks will do it.
you go. Gamecocks, all right.
Ooh.
Greg's here checking on the AC8. What's going on there?
Well, we've had some problems with the floor, and some of the teams just showed up. One was, I mean, I wasn't there, I was locked in the bunker, but he was yelling very loudly, and I get the impression that some of the teams that we reached out to congratulate on their inclusion have not made the trip. And those that have made the trip are a little bit perturbed.
We're gonna have to figure out whether or not we can get these games in or not. We've only got about a week left here. It's
Yeah.
been a
I want to
little
know what the mode of transportation was. Was it the airplane from Major League?
rough.
Wait, transportation.
Yeah. No, I
Let's
mean that's the
separate
floor.
that.
Like this is the glass, floor. It's similar to what the Big 12 did.
Let's get this down here. Let's run through everybody here for any other final thoughts, Jen, on anything you've seen in this tournament, in the other tournaments, and anything you want to discuss here. Matt, let me start with you.
The one thing, along with the favorites mostly winning, and that one theme I think you can see this tournament, it might be going forward, is injuries, to where it's not quite the NFL level. Whoever the healthiest good team is wins, but now you're seeing so many injuries because I think these kids just play too many games and specialize in basketball instead of playing all kinds of other sports to maybe like alleviate injuries and just probably play too much in general. So I think that might be a theme going forward, to where if Duke had been fully healthy, maybe they're right there with us in that. And we could have had three big teams, but yeah, it's basically Arizona State fully healthy, Michigan only lost a backup, and that Illinois fully healthy, UConn's pretty much fully healthy, and that's why they're in the Final Four.
Stalika.
Well, in week two of the coaching carousel, looks like the big chip that fell was Will Wade headed from NC State out to LSU. And on a related note, when did it become part of the job description of the governor of Louisiana to be involved in head coaching hires, whether it's their football program or their basketball program? But as we saw at NC State, they did move quickly and hired Justin Gainey, who was a member of Sendak's early teams at NC State. And then also,
You say it's week two. There's some rumblings that there that this was locked up about a month ago, also, which is
about a
not
month
good.
ago, but we haven't even had the big chip fall because North Carolina is probably waiting for the tournament to be done before they make their decision. And you also look at other hires like Chris Mack, who moved from Charleston to South Florida, and John Gross actually moved, I think I heard today, going from Akron to Charleston to
Yes, he
fill
did.
that blank. And then I think St. Bonaventure is also going to wade into the Division II pool, and they hired Mike McDonald, who had ties to the school and was also Damon's head coach, who was in the NCAA Division II Elite Eight. And I think they ended up making it to the Final Four before losing out. So we'll see how this current wave of hires does.
Titel.
If you ever have a chance to go to the NCAA tournament, I can't recommend it enough. I know not every game is going to be the Braylon Mullen shot of the century, but it was just so great. I mean, I'm walking around, I'm this little blogger that nobody's ever heard of, and like Ian Eagle is saying hello in the hallway, and Tom Crean's over here, and Stanford Steve's holding the curtain open for me. Like everybody was very friendly, and like the basketball was top notch. My friends Barry and Sherry went. He went to Duke Law. She was born in Connecticut as the family divided. And I told her after the game, like, I hope your teenage son has kids so that one day you can tell your grandkids that you were at this game because it was so amazing. On a personal note, bear down. I certainly hope my team wins, but I'm telling you, Chad, like after 25 years of always missing the Final Four, it's just nice to be there again.
Anyway, Joby, before I get to you, we told you at the start of the show that you'd be on. Just jumping in here under the wire. I've met Averman jumping on here, and I've met a thanks. Great to see you. And maybe you want to tell us a little bit about what you saw, because I know you were in Chicago for the games this week, I believe, correct?
Yeah, hi everybody. It was great. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. It was great. Awesome as always. I love the regionals. They're fantastic. The regionals are great because it's not as chaotic as the Final Four, but you still have that sense of production and, it's just being on the court when those guys are cutting down the nets and all that. It was awesome. Northwestern hosted our regional. They did a fantastic job. Everybody was great. Everything went well. The unfortunately our Elite Eight game was not as great, but
It was over by the under eight of the by the under it's under 12 of the first half or so, but
you're Chad, you were spot on. It was probably a good 8 minutes, and so that was kind of deflating, if you will. So we're hoping for a more competitive game, but it was good. We had some great first halves, and then in the Sweet 16, and then the teams kind of started to pull away there at the end, like towards the end of the second half in both of the Sweet 16 games, Alabama, Michigan, and Tennessee, Iowa State. Obviously, Iowa State, that was disappointing. So, we definitely thought that would be just a fantastic game that would come down to the wire, but they just kind of had the winds knocked out of their sails. Like it was just weird. Like they had Tennessee was obviously, I mean, they were on top of Momcilovic. They gave him zero space. They wouldn't let him do anything. They wouldn't even let him get up to get a shot. But then you had, obviously with Jefferson's absence, we kind of thought some other guys would step in and somebody had to assume the dominant role. So we saw that. Lipsey didn't really have a great game. He did all right. Momcilovic didn't really do much. And then Heisey was the guy that basically carried the team. So we were hoping for a more competitive matchup, and then hoping that Tennessee would be more competitive with Michigan, but you saw how that went down. So the games weren't the best, competition wise, but it just incredible experience, just beginning to end.
Well, I got you. I've got one more question for you. Do you have a prediction for what we're going to see this weekend? You were with us earlier, but we almost unanimously thought it was going to be Arizona, and almost unanimously thought we did unanimously think it's going to be Arizona winning it. And almost all of us picked them to beat Illinois in the final. So I hope maybe you go a different direction.
Ooh, okay. I definitely like Illinois.
Yes. And you like, but you don't like him as much as Arizona, right?
No. So I think whoever wins Arizona, Michigan will is gonna win the title. Like I feel pretty good about that. It's interesting because Illinois is going to have a bunch of people there because they're right down the road. So they're going to have a bunch of fans, and Michigan's going to have a bunch of fans. Those Michigan fans were like, I mean, they took over Chicago. So it's, I am not convinced. I think Arizona, that game's kind of a toss up for me. I think Michigan could actually
Oh,
win
yeah.
it.
Oh, I do too.
So I think whoever wins that game, whether it's Arizona or Michigan, I mean, Michigan is just, they have very few flaws. It's just hard to, like Tennessee, right? Tennessee is all about offensive rebounding, right? That's their thing, right? That's their signature thing that they're known for. And then they face a team like Michigan, who also rebounds well, who just it just size wise and just strength wise, just I mean, just knocks them. It's just insane just to watch. So I think with Michigan's size, and just their defense, I think that Arizona, it's going to be a tough matchup. So I think whoever wins that one will go on to win it all. But whether it's Arizona or Michigan, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
All right. Well, Sleepy, you're the only one that picked UConn over Illinois. So at least we have one outlier. But Joby, let me go to you for your final thought.
Yeah, and my pick pre-tournament on my bracket was Michigan. I just love what I see out of Arizona right now. But I wanted to reach out to Griggs if I could.
Uh-oh. I'm here.
Because I need Griggs AI to help me out.
Okay, sure.
Can your AI produce t-shirts? I have a great business proposition. It should have been a technical. We need to put them in baby blue and send them to Chapel Hill, and I guarantee you they will sell.
I always wanted to be the guy that sold orange shirts in either Champagne or in the Netherlands. I don't know who came up with that, but that person's a millionaire. I don't know if we'll beat that, but this is a great, this is a great entrepreneurship opportunity.
So let's go. Let's get it on the Hoops HD site. Let's get it ready.
Yes.
We're going to make millions.
Millions, yes.
So Griggs AI is making it, we might have problems.
Yeah. And you could sell, trust me, you could also sell those shirts in Raleigh, Charlottesville, Clemson. Yeah.
You could sell Griggs AI shirts. I mean, yeah.
Greg, do you have any other comments?
Well, another money-making venture of mine that I'm just going to share here. Five Guys, it's a burger. Have you guys heard of it? It's like a burger place.
Oh, yes.
Sort of fast food. I'm opening one in the state of Nebraska.
Okay. That's enough. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back again next week, Tuesday night. We're going to be doing our season wrap-up show, the last show of the season. Last time you'll have to listen to David Griggs until next year.
Until May.
But for now, I'm Chad Sherwood. That's Matt Sikowski and John Titel. I bet Abram in the middle there. Joby Fortson and David Griggs. John Stalica. Again, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again next week and enjoy the Final Four, everybody.